do a horrible job. VOA won the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today, Gregory Stockel tells us about gourmet water in Dubai. Brian Lynn presents this week's science report. Finally, we visit a place full of history and beauty, Mesa Verde National Park. But first, famous Christian religious places in southern Europe are seeing record numbers of visitors. But not everybody is happy about the large crowds. Church leaders are finding it difficult to balance the needs of tourists and the people who come to pray. This spring, the Vatican opened a separate pathway starting outside St. Peter's Basilica for those who want to take part in religious services. St. Peter's spokesperson Roberta Leone said officials made the change because of long lines for the 55,000 daily visitors. The Vatican's move is an example of what many churches are doing. They have tourists and religious people go separate ways. Religious services are sometimes held in different places, and sometimes tourists are not permitted at worship times. With an estimated 330 million people visiting religious places yearly around the world, religious tourism is one of the largest parts of the tourism market. Worshippers often come because celebrated churches generally have more services than regular churches. They need to be able to enter at no cost. Tourists often pay fees that are important for churches to maintain their buildings. Daniel Olson of Brigham Young University in Utah studies religious tourism. Olson said of the situation, "It's just really hard because you also want people to experience your faith." Some religious people are unhappy with a large number of visitors. After the ceremony of Mass in the burial area of the Sagrada Familia Church in Barcelona, Spain, Juan Albaigues said, "The temple needs to be a place for services and not a theme park." He praised the policy changes in recent years to celebrate one Sunday Mass at the main altar. But there is such demand for the 800 free tickets that several hundred people waiting often do not get in, said Josep Maria Turrell. Turrell is the rector at Sagrada Familia, who also oversees tourism from the local church organization. Religious leaders say the histories of the sacred buildings should be presented to visitors. These visitors increasingly do not know about faith traditions in churches. José Fernández Lago is rector of the Cathedral of Santiago de Compostela. Filled with beautiful art, Santiago's cathedral draws hundreds of thousands of tourists and religious visitors known as pilgrims. To remain a special place for religious pilgrims, Lago said, the cathedral does not charge money for entry. The cathedral also does not limit visitor numbers or require people to wear formal clothing. But visits are not permitted during the four daily masses celebrated at the main altar. And priests, as well as security guards, always have to ask visitors to lower their voices so that worshippers can pray in peace. Some people go to the cathedral and they don't realize they are in a church, Lago observed. He added, it's a situation that's developing in nations that were majority Christian, and now faith is cooling off.
New kinds of drinks like smoothies, lattes, beers, and cocktails have become popular in recent years. Now a place in Dubai is serving what it claims to be gourmet water. 30 different kinds of it. The Aqua Water Bar by Lukul gets its water the traditional way, from the pipe that runs water to your house. The government of Dubai in the United Arab Emirates says water from the pipe, called tap water, is safe to drink and meets international standards. But people in the Middle Eastern city still prefer bottled water. The water at Aqua Water Bar is said to be different. The bar says it injects a very small amount of minerals, called microdosing, into the water. The system is designed by the German water filtration company, Lukul, and its water is compared to costly water like Alpine or Arctic sourced. Roya Jabari is a director at Aqua Water. She said experts have designed its water to fit your needs and mood. And she added, we can give you the perfectly mineralized recipe. One drink, Runner's Heaven, is high in sodium and potassium to help runners after being in the desert heat. Another, Vegan's Choice, offers minerals that could be lacking when not eating meat. Buyers can fill up their bottles with any of the mineral combinations for around 50 cents per 500 milliliters or pay more for a non-alcoholic mixed drink. It is not an entirely new idea. A water bar serving what it said was heavily filtered New York City tap water opened in the city's East Village area in 2012. It received heavy criticism. Another briefly opened in Washington, D.C. in 2019. It also did not get the best reviews. Neither appears to have stayed open for very long. But Dubai, a modern city built on desert sands, could be such a place for the product. Alcohol is available in bars in the UAE, but the Muslim country's population does not drink alcohol. As a center of international business, it brings in wealthy, health-centered people who support the wellness industry. Although Aqua Water is often visited by businessmen who work in the surrounding Dubai Media City, Jabari says that the bar is not just for wealthy buyers. She says the water, which sells for 54 cents per 500 milliliters, is not too costly. To help the environment, buyers can either fill their own bottles or buy a reusable one starting at around $2.50. Early reviews appear to be good, with the bar having 4.6 stars on Google reviews based on around 12 reviews. The water was actually different, said Bilal Rizvi, who stopped in to try it out recently. Jabari was born in San Diego, California, and is a designer who has lived in the UAE for 24 years. She designed the bar around ideas based on water. Additionally, the bar also serves Persian food as a way to honor her ancestry. Jabari hopes to expand the business. She sees room for growth in neighboring countries. She said, "Saudi Arabia is a huge market for us. I believe that Abu Dhabi is our next step." I'm Gregory Stockel.
Researchers say they have identified earth movement signals that could predict earthquakes up to 2 hours before they hit. The signals were recorded or detected by GPS collection devices. The devices were positioned in areas where major earthquakes had struck in the past. Scientists noted, however, that the right equipment does not currently exist to use the data to predict earthquakes. But if the sensitivity of current GPS measuring devices can be improved, the researchers say a new earthquake warning system could be possible. Earthquakes are caused by movements or slips in existing faults under Earth's surface. The U.S. Geological Survey, USGS, explains, "A fault is a long break in rock attached to Earth's crust. When tension builds up along a fault, energy waves are released and travel through the crust. This causes the ground to shake." Technology for predicting earthquakes currently remains very limited, but the USGS does have some equipment that can pick up seismic data when an earthquake is just starting. The term seismic relates to earthquake activity. The USGS method makes it possible to warn people in areas where seismic activity is expected. But this method generally can only provide a warning several seconds before an earthquake hits. The USGS system is called Shake Alert. It has already been deployed along the U.S. West Coast. That is where the majority of earthquakes happen in the country. But the new detection method could produce warnings up to 2 hours before the damaging effects of an earthquake are felt. Such a system could save lives by giving people the chance to get out of buildings that might collapse in an earthquake. Two scientists from France's National Research Institute for Sustainable Development carried out a study that described the latest results. The findings recently appeared in the publication Science. For the study, researchers examined GPS data collected before and after past earthquake events around the world. The data was collected on 90 earthquakes measuring larger than 7 on the Richter scale. The study period covered the past 20 years. The team identified a pattern of fault movements as they examined the data collected from different areas. The movement signals were recorded within 2 hours of an earthquake striking. The researchers said the study demonstrates that faults generally begin to move about 2 hours before a large earthquake. Scientists had identified such signals before single earthquakes in the past, but until now, researchers were not able to link those signals to all seismic events. While the data identified this pattern, the scientists said the instruments that could capture GPS data in real time do not currently exist. The National Research Institute for Sustainable Development issued a statement on the development. It said that in order to make predictions, researchers would need to measure signals at least 10 times smaller than what we can presently do. Another way to possibly build a better earthquake prediction system would be to develop dense measurement networks that sit very close to faults. However, such an effort would require major technological progress, the Institute said. Quentin Blettery is a geophysicist at Côte d'Azur University in the city of Nice. Blettery worked together on the study with Jean-Mateo Nouquet, another researcher at the university. Blettery told Science that the study found that no observable movement was identified in the first 46 hours leading up to an earthquake. But starting around 2 hours before an earthquake, the GPS signals recording movement started to increase. To confirm its findings, the team compared that data to more than 100,000 random time periods recorded when no earthquakes were reported. That experiment found that similar patterns in non-earthquake areas happened just 0.3% of the time. This tells us earthquakes are predictable in nature, Blettery told Science. The scientists note that more research is needed to support their findings. Much of the information used in the latest study, for example, depended heavily on data from GPS stations near major earthquake sites. I'm Brian Lynn.
Brian Lynn joins me now to talk more about his science report. Thanks for being here, Brian.
Of course, Ashley. Thanks for having me.
Your report this week dealt with a possible new method for predicting earthquakes up to 2 hours in advance. But we learned that the method will need further development before it is fully operational. What are the researchers still working on?
Yes, so as you mentioned, the scientists say they have so far demonstrated a proof-of-concept method. It uses GPS data to detect weak signals released before large earthquakes hit. But the instruments they used are currently not sensitive enough to predict earthquakes in real time, so they're attempting to further develop those and also expand their research in order to confirm their findings.
And the report notes there is already an earthquake warning system deployed on the U.S. West Coast. How is that system different?
So that system, called Shake Alert, uses sensors to detect seismic waves released after an earthquake has begun. But the creators of that system make clear that it is not a predictor of earthquakes. It can only warn people when a quake has already started. That system has been shown to provide seconds of warning before the ground starts shaking, but no more than that. So that is why researchers involved in the new study are so excited about the possibility that their method might be able to provide earthquake warnings up to 2 hours in advance.
Okay, thanks for being here, Brian, and thanks again for that report.
You're welcome. Thank you, Ashley.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. Our National Parks journey across the United States takes us to southwestern Colorado. We are visiting a large U.S. national park called Mesa Verde. It was established to protect the culture of ancient Native Americans. Mesa Verde National Park is over 100 years old. In 1906, then-President Theodore Roosevelt signed a bill creating the park. Mesa Verde offers visitors a look into the lives of the ancestral Pueblo people, who lived in the area between 700 and 1,400 years ago. The national park protects almost 5,000 archaeological sites. They are some of the best preserved archaeological areas in the country.
The term Mesa Verde is Spanish for green table. Early Spanish explorers gave the name to the area. In geology, a mesa is a flat-topped highland with steep sides. Mesa Verde is not actually a mesa. It is a cuesta, a term used to describe a hill with a sharp drop on one side and a soft, gentle slope on the other. A more correct name for the national park, then, would be Cuesta Verde. The gently sloping side of Mesa Verde was important in the formation of the 600 cliff dwellings within the park. Cliff dwellings are living areas that were set up in caves, the large open areas in the side of the cliff.
Mesa Verde rises more than 540 meters above the ground. Visitors can drive to the top of the hill on a winding mountain road. In the distance are the flatlands and mountains of an area called the Four Corners. That is where the western states of Colorado, Utah, New Mexico, and Arizona meet. Some of the ruins in the Four Corners area are from the earliest people who lived there. They were hunters and gatherers, now known as basket makers. The basket makers lived in simple caves. The first evidence that ancient people had moved to Mesa Verde is from about 1,500 years ago. Those people lived in pit houses, large holes in the ground with wood and mud covering the top. In the 8th century, the early Pueblo people began building square structures of large connected rooms, or pueblos, above ground.
More than 300 years later, they climbed down the canyon walls and began building cliff dwellings.
Today, visitors to Mesa Verde National Park can see some of the remains of all four kinds of settlements. Visitors are able to explore several of Mesa Verde's renowned cliff dwellings. Many of them take several hours to reach by foot. Signs along some of the paths point to trees and plants used by the ancestral Puebloan people. Visitors will also find the juniper and pinyon pine trees that make Mesa Verde green. Cliff Palace is the largest cliff dwelling in Mesa Verde and North America. It has 150 rooms. It is not easy to get to Cliff Palace. Visitors must climb down into the canyon on a narrow path with many steps. They must also climb down several ladders. But the trip is well worth the effort. Visitors can examine this beautiful structure made of stone and clay. Spruce Treehouse is the third largest cliff dwelling in Mesa Verde. It has 114 rooms. It also has 8 underground rooms called kivas. Pueblo Indian men gathered in the kivas for ceremonies.
Mesa Verde National Park occupies 21,000 hectares of land in Montezuma County, Colorado. About 500,000 people visit the park each year. Archaeologists working in Mesa Verde have recovered many objects that the ancient Pueblo people used, including tools and jewelry. Many of the objects can be seen in the visitors' center. However, human remains or any object from a burial area may not be touched or shown. This is to respect the wishes of the modern Puebloan people who live in the area today. Mesa Verde has been recognized as a special place. The United Nations named it as one of the first World Heritage Sites in 1978. Today's Pueblo Indians consider Mesa Verde a sacred place, and for visitors from around the world, it remains a place of mystery and beauty. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Katie Weaver.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.